Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
You're listening to Through the Smoke. This is Radio at Firehouse.com. We're going to continue from last week's radio show on the discussions of volunteer fire departments. Why are we doing that? The interest was incredible. We got so many emails, it overloaded the system, and we had thousands of listeners to last week's show. Obviously, there's a big interest in all fire services, in particular about the volunteer fire service. This week's show we're calling Success or Failure, the Volunteer Fire Department. We're going to take a focus on the mission and why some volunteer fire departments succeed and why some volunteer fire departments fail. There's currently a lot of discussion nationally regarding volunteer departments. Just recently, USA Today ran a front page story on the subject of VFD membership and response times. And in New York on Long Island this week, the newspaper Newsday, which is newsday.com, is running a week-long, very in-depth series about the volunteer fire departments on Long Island. Volunteer fire departments, some are very successful and provide good service to those who dial 911 and others simply do not. And we're going to talk about that today. We've got our guest this week on Through the Smoke at radioatfires.com, former fire chief and volunteer fire services advocate, Dr. Bill Genoway, a nationally recognized authority on volunteer fire services, Chief Randy O'Donnell of the West End Fire and Rescue Company in Shippensburg, Pennsylvania, and former Fire Chief Crawford Wiesling, President of Investigative Loss Control in Minneapolis, who has a long history as a fire chief in the Volunteer Fire Service. We're going to have a pretty intimate discussion on why some volunteer fire departments succeed and why some fail. But first, let's take a look at what's happening out there. I just got this, that the city of Amarillo, Texas, may file a lawsuit in the death of a firefighter. And interestingly, the firefighter fell out of the apparatus. He was not wearing a seatbelt, but the door appears to have had a defective latch. And this is from Amarillo.com. There's several product liability issues surrounding this death, according to the city attorney. They sent a letter in response to a newspaper's request last week asking for a copy of an engineer's report used in the investigation. Tragically, firefighter Christopher Brian Hunton, 27 years old, died this year on April 25th after falling from a passenger seat as the apparatus he was riding on turned a corner on the way to a house fire 2 days earlier. The city earlier this month announced preliminary findings of its investigation, including that firefighter Hunton had not been wearing a seatbelt, but also that the door appeared to have a defective latch. They noted several liability issues surrounding firefighter Hunton's death, whether the door latch was properly designed, whether the latch performed properly or failed, what role maintenance might have played in the latch's failure, and whether alternative designs of the door or latch could have been prevented, or could have prevented the latch's failure. The family declined to say whether they're going to sue the fire apparatus manufacturer or not, which is Freightliner American LaFrance, but they did say they're not going to sue the city. This is an interesting issue. This almost could be a chicken and the egg situation. The latch is there to protect you from falling out, but so is the seatbelt. And while not specifically commenting on this situation, this is such a reminder for all fire officers. Make sure your personnel have their belts on. I understand it's a big pain in the ass because of your gear and your air pack and all that, but you know what? Latches fail. Maybe the door wasn't closed right. Maybe the manufacturer didn't make it right. Who knows? But the fact of the matter is, if you wear your seatbelt, the chances of you falling out of your apparatus or getting ejected out of your apparatus is a whole lot less than if you're not wearing your seatbelt. And again, the above story drives that home. Naturally, the courts will decide how this all works out, and people spend, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars defending or fighting or whatever the case may be. But maybe a situation similar to this can be avoided in your department if you just have the guts to do your job, officers, and make it clear to your personnel, we're not going to move the apparatus unless you have your seatbelt on. It might just solve the problem. Some other issues out there this week. Funeral services with full fire department honors are set for Thursday for a Georgia firefighter killed Saturday when the apparatus he was operating crashed on a roadway, and the apparatus actually split in two. Our deepest sympathies go out to the family and friends of Captain Kevin Joe Foster, 41 years old, who is a 17-year veteran of the Ellerslie Fire Company. He was driving the apparatus, the only apparatus this department owned. This was their only apparatus this past Saturday when it veered off the road. Officials said that they believe the water started rocking, which prevented him from regaining control of the vehicle. The 1990 E1 apparatus split in two after crashing into a tree. The wreck happened at an abandoned railroad bed, described as a very tough spot. And that, of course, reminds us of the issues with apparatus, especially tanker-type vehicles, from what I remember. And, Bill, maybe you can comment, or Randy. But when you're running a tanker, it's either got to be all full or all empty. Isn't that pretty much a good rule of thumb?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Bill?
I concur also. You really have to be concerned about the movement of the vehicle and how the center of gravity changes.
Yeah, the sloshing back and forth. Yeah, that's what I thought. So, again, we're not commenting specifically on that incident. None of us were there. But this is, again, a good reminder. And that's why we talk about these injuries and deaths, as a reminder to bring it back home and see if, quote, it could happen at your fire department. An Oregon fire chief died last week while suffering a stroke at a fire service conference. And while this may or may not be a specific line of duty death, this was a very popular fire chief. We got a lot of letters about the tragic passing about Chief Brian J. Pugh, 53 years old, who was attending an aircraft rescue and firefighting conference in Dallas when he had the stroke. He had been with the Port of Portland, Oregon Airport since December of 2004. He moved from Salt Lake City. He was a very, very popular and well-known chief. Our sympathies go out to them. Very tragically, in Virginia, the burned remains of a volunteer fire chief were found in the woods after he went to battle a brush fire by himself. A search party found the body of Chief Max Willard, 68 years old, of the Oakwood Volunteer Fire Department on Sunday morning. Chief Willard went into the woods with a fire rake about an hour after this large fire started Saturday, and they never found him after that. Nobody specifically is stating what the cause of death was, but one comment from the sheriff's office down there is his body had been burned by the fire. Again, here, you know, this situation here, the fire chief is operating by himself, and we're certainly not at these incidents, and our comments are never, ever to be critical or criticized, but again, to remind each other. I think really, and recently I'm coming up more and more to the conclusion, following what we saw in Pennsylvania a few weeks ago and then this, absolutely none of us ever should be operating by ourselves on the fire ground. Two and two out is brought almost to a new level as we start thinking about this. A brush fire, yeah, have a partner. Working an auto accident, where's your partner? And using a strict accountability system, and really the best accountability system to me is a good, strong, tough, no bullshit company officer who knows that his crews are going to operate in teams and knows where they are at all times. Our sympathies go out to the members of the Oakwood Fire Department and specifically the family of Chief Willard. Another tragic loss, Ken Mitchell, chief of the Tull Volunteer Fire Department, passed away in Arkansas. Chief Mitchell, 59 years old, was at the scene of a working house fire. He basically was preparing his crews to operate the fire. The chief went to sit in his truck. The personnel saw the chief in distress, pulled him out of the truck, and another tragic heart-related incident. Some of you may be following the news series in Long Island on Newsday.com, NEWSDAY.com. Newsday is Long Island, one of Long Island's larger newspapers, and Newsday is doing a six or seven, actually it looks like an eight-part series on the volunteer fire service out there. And it's an extremely in-depth, it's probably the most in-depth report I've ever looked at as far as reviewing fire departments and services provided. They're looking at the buildings, the apparatus, the personnel, the costs, and things like that. And while it certainly is information that is of value, and clearly the series brings out some fire districts and some fire departments that appear to be pissing money away, it shouldn't take away from the fact that the majority of Long Island fire departments and the fire departments providing services out there do a heck of a job, do a good response times, a fair price, and are saving lives. Some might read this report as if that the Long Island Fire Service is failing. And although there are issues and issues of response, and issue, I mean, one fire department, for example, one fire district, the fire commissioners treated themselves to cashmere sport jackets, and they called them uniforms. Other fire departments rented $1,000 buses to go down to Baltimore for conventions. And, you know, that may or may not be true. I have no reason to believe it's not true in what the reporters are saying. But the fact of the matter is that day-to-day when the tones are set off, these firefighters in Long Island and many others across the country are doing the job. And really, what is the job? And what's the real bottom line when it comes to volunteer fire departments or all fire departments? You know, by now most of you have read the article in USA Today in this past week regarding the volunteer fire service. And while there are various reasons for these reported issues and problems, some discussed in the article and some clearly not, whether it be in the Long Island article or the USA Today article, the fact of the matter is that in many areas the challenges of operating an effective volunteer accommodation fire department is a major issue. We've been told that in these coming days the Long Island report was going to be in depth, and it certainly is, and it's worth looking at. There are many, many departments that have a lot to be proud of that those numbers have come out, and some departments need to take a hard look, and other departments, I think their taxpayers are going to take a hard look at how they're spending some money. It's absolutely ridiculous. I've never been one to be critical about apparatus. I like apparatus with a lot of important equipment on it, and sometimes, you know what, if it keeps morale up, chrome wheels, that's great. I don't think morale is kept up by chrome wheels, though. So what do you do with your volunteer fire department? How do you provide what's needed? The issues of running a volunteer fire department today are probably more challenging than ever. One interesting tool that's out there for you to figure out the value of your volunteer fire department is the National Volunteer Fire Council's Cost Saving Calculator. It's a free tool that will help your volunteer fire department determine its contribution to the community and provide data for the citizens and especially your politicians who fund the departments. It can help you educate your city, your town, your councils, your fire department boards, your commissioners, and even your firefighters about the value that your volunteer fire department may bring to the community. If you go to nvfc.org, National Volunteer Fire Council, nvfc.org, look for the calculator on there and check it out. It's free. It's online for anybody. And the initial study itself is downloadable as well. They did a big study to determine how to put this calculator together, and there's even a free PowerPoint program on there. You know, generally, you can go to most any volunteer firehouse and hear the discussions about how much money is being saved by the volunteers. And that's great, and that's a big deal. And while money may be saved, it also must be compared to that particular fire department's staffing, their timely response, their training, their leadership, and other serious challenges. After all, saving money may be great, but if your volunteer fire department has poor response times, poor turnout, little or inadequate training, and is missing the biggest factor, significant leadership, all issues facing volunteer fire companies and facing some career fire departments as well, the money savings is BS. So often, volunteer fire departments say, look at the money we're saving the community. Well, if you're not getting your trucks out with qualified and trained people on a timely basis, it's nonsense. You're not saving anybody anything, and it's a facade. The community feels like they're protected, but are they? The true answers are always known by the people who carry the fire pagers. Ever heard this discussion go on? We love our volunteer fire department. We have some great people, and we really do care. Yeah, but sometimes we really have trouble getting the apparatus out for calls when the tones go off. Yeah, but look how much money we're saving our community. Yeah, but so many of our responding members fail to show up for basic training. Yeah, but look at how much money we're saving the community. It's a facade, gang. If you're responding quickly with qualified people, then you're doing a decent job. But how many volunteer fire departments, the tones go off, and the tones go off, and the tones go off, and people are not responding? That's why your volunteer fire department was formed, to respond to calls. And when people say, ah, we're just volunteers, there couldn't be more of a lame excuse. You volunteered to join your volunteer fire department or even combination department and follow the rules and be an active member. Otherwise, why join? I know so many volunteer fire departments that have a core group of people doing a lot of work, but then there's members who come for, you know, one meeting a year, one drill a year, and make a few calls a year. Why are they there? Where's the leadership getting rid of these people and recruiting some good people? And if your fire department's not providing the service, where's the leadership looking at alternative means, which may also include hiring career personnel to supplement your daytime or evening responses? The bottom line is when Mrs. Smith dials 911, she wants help now. There are many outstanding volunteer fire departments that consistently respond quickly. Volunteer fire departments that are well-led with well-trained and adequately staffed companies providing good service. Service that matters. Often these volunteer fire departments are like many that have to also raise their own funds. That's a whole other issue, raising funds. I don't understand that. If the police in the building next door don't have to do fundraising, why do volunteer fire departments? The National Volunteer Fire Council Cost Saving Calculator is a tool that will be helpful in getting your local politicians and others to understand what you provide when it comes to understanding the value of your volunteer fire service. But if you're not getting your trucks on the road, none of that matters. We'll be back after this break with Bill Randy and Crawford talking about success or failure volunteer fire departments. So what makes a successful or failed volunteer fire department? Certainly when people are well-funded, that solves one of the problems. When they're well-funded and the money's pissed away, that creates new problems, and that's for somebody else to talk about at another time. Or maybe we'll get into that at another show. But today we're going to talk about what, as far as a real grassroots volunteer fire department, what makes it work. There's a lot of discussions going on regarding volunteer fire departments, and certainly it's a society issue right now as traditionally rural areas become suburban or urban. Some volunteer fire departments have kept up with the change. And it is the responsibility of whether it be a volunteer department or a career department, as your community changes, you need to predict those changes and adjust the way your fire department responds. What services you provide. You know, for years, volunteer fire departments were fine when they blew the whistle for two or three calls a year, and the community members came out, got on the trucks, and went. That's what the community asked for. As communities have grown, fire departments have changed, have matured, have adjusted, and some haven't. Some departments have tripled or quadrupled their runs, and they're still waiting for the siren to blow and responding. They're still attending one training a year, things like that. And that's not a good example of a successful volunteer fire department. That's why some fire departments fail. The responsibility to change your organization as it moves on with the community is paramount. We've got with us today Bill Genoway, Dr. Bill Genoway, former fire chief, well-known, nationally recognized authority on volunteer fire services. Bill, welcome. Tell us about yourself, about your department, a little bit about your background.
Well, thanks, Billy. It's a pleasure to be here and chat a little bit with you today. And first of all, thank you so much for advocating the use of that cost savings calculator. I don't know whether you're aware of it or not, but I was the project leader on that. And we did that through St. Joseph's University for the National Volunteer Fire Council. And it was one of the things that I was going to talk about today. So you saved me a few minutes. But my background at the present time, I'm the chairman of the Fire and Rescue Services for Upper Marion Township, Pennsylvania, which is King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia. My background includes services as chief and president in King of Prussia, as well as being the fire chief in East Bethel Township, which is in Washington County, Pennsylvania. Very small coal mining community as compared to the expanding, robust economy of the King of Prussia area. So I've had the opportunity to see volunteerism in both types of communities, and both communities still have all-volunteer fire forces. In addition to that, in my background, I am an adjunct professor at St. Joseph's University and teach such things as strategic planning for fire departments and law enforcement agencies. And as many of you probably know, my day job, I work for VFIS as their executive vice president responsible for education, training, and consulting. Last year, though, I was placed in a rather unique position of being the chairman of Pennsylvania's Senate Resolution 60 Commission. The legislature deemed it appropriate that a study was needed to help identify what changes needed to occur to keep the volunteer system in Pennsylvania sustained for the indefinite future. And there were a number of EMS squads and fire departments that were either being challenged or going out of business. Our report, which is available at pfesi.org, www.pfesi.org, is a 23 recommendation report where I'm happy to report that as of this week, we have in excess of 230 bills in the House and Senate of Pennsylvania, and approximately 75% of those deal with SR 60 issues. Several of them are in committee, several are already out of committee, and we have approximately 8 of those recommendations are either complied with already or on their way to compliance. But all of that goes to your central message of what makes a good volunteer fire company, and how do they manage their future? And if you don't manage your own future, it's going to manage you. And one of the things that I've been involved with this year as well is the United States Fire Administration's recruitment and retention manual. I have the opportunity to be the project manager on the revision of that. And as such, St. Joseph's University did another study, and it was interesting, the two things that came out as to why people leave the volunteer fire service. The first one is they no longer have the time to volunteer, and the second one is your high point here, Bill, which is leadership.
Absolutely.
The leadership is chasing them out of the fire company.
Absolutely.
And I spoke to the Pennsylvania Firemen's Association as their keynote speaker back in September, and I related a story that I heard. An accountant, a CPA, walked into the fire station and told the chief there, said, I would really love to help your organization, but I can't fight fires. And I don't know what the reason was, whether it was a physical issue. He didn't want to fight fires. He didn't have time. But here is an individual who brought a technical skill that every fire department needs, and he was turned away because the chief said, if you can't fight fires, we don't want you.
Well, Bill, that's an example of volunteer fire departments having to change if they want to survive. And let me tie that to a story that you'll appreciate. A friend of mine is a former fire chief in Long Island, and he moved to another community, again, within Long Island. He has a very, very strong fire services background. He's an instructor, was a very successful fire chief, has his bachelor's in fire administration and public administration. Recently was able to, because of some freed-up time, decide he wanted to join the volunteer fire department in the new town he lived in. So he went there recently and talked to them, and same thing. This guy's 50 years old. He necessarily doesn't want to fight fires as being an interior firefighter, but he can drive. He'd go through their training. He could do fundraising. He'd do administrative work. He could do training. And the response he got back was, now, if you're not going to join as a full firefighter, we can't use you. This same fire department, tones go off over and over and over during the daytime to provide services. So that's a great point you bring up, Bill, about how departments are recruiting and what changes they need to be made. And we're going to get back to you in just a second. I want to ask you a few questions. One about some of those, what are some of the stronger legislative changes, because I'm a big fan of the Pennsylvania Fire Service, and I can just imagine some kicking and screaming going on when that information was introduced. Let's talk to Randy, who's fire chief at the West End Fire and Rescue Company in Shippensburg, Chief Randy O'Donnell. Randy, tell us about yourself and tell us about your organization.
Oh, good morning first, and thank you for letting us be a part of this program. We're really honored to be a part of this. Well, I'm Randy Adolf, Chief of West End Fire and Rescue in Shippensburg, Pennsylvania. Our department is a primary rescue department, and we also have a two-piece engine company.
Rescue, now, Randy, rescue is defined as heavy rescue.
Yeah, heavy rescue.
Okay.
Yeah, a heavy rescue department for the area. Our square miles we protect is about 75 square miles with first and second due area that Shippensburg Fire Department covers. We've got about 770 alarms a year. I have about 35 active firefighters, 15 junior members, and about 10 active fire police in our organization.
Define an active firefighter. They have to respond a certain amount of runs. They have to pull duty crew. What does that mean?
Yeah, our active firefighters, basically, they're the ones that are going out. Normally firefighter 1 certified. They're the driver operators. They attend so much training per year, so many fire calls per year, so much fundraising per year. But I also have people that I didn't even list there. I got a category of probably about another 15 people that all they do is, like, they're active members, but they're not specific firefighters, but they'll come in and take care of fundraising. They'll take care of, specific things like you're talking about. A guy will come in, he may just, I have a good, like my treasurer. That's all he does. He doesn't fight fires, never seen a fire rode a fire truck, but he had skills. He worked at the Shippensburg University, and we took his talents and put him here as our department treasurer. He's been treasurer for about 3 years.
So it makes it where not all of your members have to do everything. You can use your members where they best fit into the organization.
Exactly. About 10 years, we set back and had to take a look at. We were hardcore, like a lot of the departments are within the area or within the state, actually, saying if you're not doing this, and this, you can't be a member. You throw 5, 6, 7, 8 people out year, and then you start seeing your numbers dwindle. So we had to take a hard look at what we were doing, saying, hey, our numbers are declining, people aren't coming in, and we're turning away people with talent. So we had to rethink what we're doing. And it was a little hard, you know, it was a little hard changes because a lot of the guys say, well, this is the rules, this is the regulations. Well, we had to make some really hard changes, you know, about 10 years ago and say, if we're going to survive, these are some of the things that we're going to have to do. You know, we got to change the rules and regulations and bend rules and regulations to use people with different talents. And
okay.
So that's some of the things that we did there early on.
Cool. Let's talk now with former Fire Chief Crawford Wiesling. Crawford, tell us about yourself. You have a real interesting background and currently an interesting career, but you also come from West End Fire Company in Shippensburg, correct, Chief?
That's correct, sir. Good morning, gentlemen. I became interested in West End Fire and Rescue Company about 2 years after its creation. And it was just an interest that you know, it's just one of those magic bullets, I guess, that all of a sudden that it affected me and it's decided this is where I wanted to go and this is what I wanted to do. And just a little bit of my bringing up, when I got involved in something real hard and I put everything I had into it. And so I got involved with the fire company in its fledgling state and in its early growth period, and got to work with a good core of firefighters that had come from some other departments that found the need and wanted to create another company or a need for another company to protect a particular part of the first run jurisdiction that they were operating out of.
Okay. So, how many years were you? Or you're still a member? How many years were you active at West End?
Really active, 21 years.
Okay.
21 years.
Okay. And the West End today, is it the West End that you joined?
Oh, no. It's the change, but I guess where I'm going at is through my years as fire chief, and then I noticed you joined or addressed a couple other issues in another program about the two-hatter program. I became a two-hatter. I joined the career department in Chambersburg and was a career driver from that department for a number of years, and then I had an opportunity to go on, and I was approached by the county at that time, and I was ultimately appointed in that time period in the late 60s and early 70s. They were called civil defense directors.
Right.
And instead of emergency management personnel or directors now, that role, because in that part of Pennsylvania a lot of things were lacking, that gave me a dual responsibility to upgrade and to bring services online that the county and all the fire departments just didn't have in place at that time.
So
and,
support services, coordination, maybe communications, things
first
like that?
That's correct. The major accomplishments was to start to get all the fire chiefs together in the county to become a major push and to get the county commissioners on board, and we created the Franklin County Communications Center, which is now currently the 911 center, and then also put the first countywide air cascade systems in place, and some of the things were all done through the Department of Civil Defense, and they weren't necessarily grassroots fire department issues, but they were some of the keys to bringing some of the fire departments together and work together. Then we did that, and then I had an opportunity along the way to leave Shippensburg for a short period of time, and I became Director of Public Safety in the city of Lock Haven, Pennsylvania. And this was to help rebuild a city after the great hurricane that struck Pennsylvania in 72 called Agnes.
Okay.
But I ultimately went back home because my roots were with West End Fire and Rescue, and stayed in that department. And some of the things that I mean, if you take credit for something, it's when you say what are the two things. I listened to Dr. Genoway talk about it. I listened to you talk about it. But the two primary things that stuck in my crawl from day one, because I was even at that time I was seeing the failures, was response and the leadership issues. There was just So many of the departments didn't have any drive. They just, I mean, they were there because they had been there for already for 50 or 100 years. You know, there's a lot of steep history because, you know, some of those towns in that part of the world were, you know, were chartered in the early 1700s.
Right.
And so the fire department tradition was there and well established, and it was a hard mold to break. And my goal was, in this area, was that was to get out and get the response, because I was seeing what was happening, and I was seeing that departments weren't getting out, and they weren't being able to respond properly. And one of the first things that I noted or was able to kind of get into my crawl was people, and the fact that we were starting to see in West End Fire and Rescue particularly a core group that wanted to do things together, okay, besides just firefighting.
Right.
There was a social, and I saw the opportunity to make the department kind of a social center.
Sometimes known as the brotherhood and sisterhood in different circles.
Sisterhood.
Yeah.
And even as way back as the early 60s, we decided to bring... to get the women of the husbands involved in and created a ladies auxiliary,
uh-huh,
to be the support group. So
right.
now we had a lot of family functions. When
right.
things would go on and we'd have things to do, there was husband and wife teams showing up.
Well, you had people who wanted to be around each other.
That's right.
Like, yeah, and a lot of times, you know, I love to tell the story the volunteer fire department, the meeting the night before, had a battle. They all fought with each other. Everybody was annoyed, et cetera. Everybody left. They went home and wondered, how does our fire company even function? The next day, you wake up, you feel a little bit better about yourself. You ride by the firehouse, but you see that SOB's car in the driveway, and you keep going by the firehouse because you don't want to be with them. One of the biggest keys in volunteer fire departments is volunteer firefighters wanting to be there.
Well, that was the idea, if I may continue.
Absolutely.
That was the idea, Chief, was to create an environment where we wanted the people to come into the station, okay? And that environment started to spread out, and as Randy can attest to, because Randy was a neighborhood kid, and he had a core group of kids that were part of two of my boys and other boys in the neighborhood, and at one point, before they were even members, there was a couple of the other officers in the department said, "Hell, these kids know more about the operation and how our fire department works than we do, because we kept an open door policy." That was my biggest goal, was to keep the firehouses open. And even today, as I travel, and I'm in a lot of stations and work with a lot of stations because of the business that we're in today here in Minneapolis, is and being a nationally recognized fire investigation team. We work with a lot of departments over the country, and the thing that gets in my crawl the most is to ride by these stations, and the doors are down, and the place is locked up, and nobody sees anything. I think it was either you or Dr. Genoway talked about the stations are only open when they need to be. I was an aggressive chief, and my stations were open 24 hours a day. My station was open 24 hours a day. I felt and I believed that. And you can even ride by today. Randy's got it in a condition to go home, and I think that's one of the things that led to this thing, because a couple of weeks ago we had another individual that walked into the station at 11:30 at Friday night, and it was like it was the middle of the day, and there was crews doing one thing, a couple of crews in the day room, there were some crews upstairs, and the place was open, active, live, and well. And,
yeah, our good friend Steve Austin from IAAI, who's very active politically in the fire service, relayed that story to me, that he stopped in and visited the firehouse, and there seemed to always be a crew there.
And that's our goal, and I know that's Randy's goal, and that was my goal, to have the leadership to make it a warm place. People want to be there, and one of the biggest thrills you get when the West End did away with the house sirens, because they're basically on the edge of a little industrial residential area, and they didn't need to blow the house siren, because with the advent of communications and pagers,
right,
it would be nice to be in town. And you know what was amazing? was that you knew when there was a call or a fire call, because the other company still had their sirens hooked up, and you'd hear the West End rigs come out of the station, be on the street and running before the county's ever dispatched or activated their house sirens.
Well, it sounds like West End, and we're going to dig a lot deeper. West End being focused and keeping up with the needs of the community. We're going to take a break in a second, but basically I'm going to go back to each of you and ask you what you think. What is successful? Why do volunteer fire departments fail? Bill, I want to talk to you about some of the more significant legislative changes. Randy, I'm going to ask you, why is West End successful in Crawford as well? What did it over the years? What changes did you make? What draws people to West End? Basically, we've all known fire departments, career and volunteer, but of course today we're talking about volunteer, where people want nothing to do with them, and others, people are proud to be a member. And if you sell your shirts, people who are not even members of your department want to wear your shirt because they relay to the success of your organization. We'll be back. This is Radio at Firehouse.com. Through the smoke, we're talking about success or failures, the volunteer fire department.
Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
We're back with Dr. Bill Genoway, nationally recognized fire authority on volunteer fire services, Chief Randy O'Donnell, the West End Fire and Rescue in Shippensburg. That's in Franklin County, Pennsylvania, Randy?
Yes, in Franklin County, right on the line.
Very good. And former Fire Chief Crawford Wiesling, who has a long history with West End, and I thought it would be real interesting to have Crawford with us today because he saw it then and he's seeing it now and can provide that spread of history. Let's go to Dr. Genoway for a few minutes. Bill, in my opinion, a successful volunteer fire department, you can tell in about 10 minutes. You stop in, usually the place has opened up, people are hanging out, members are perhaps even pulling duty crews, and when the tones go off, it's very short minutes for the apparatus to get on the road. A non-successful volunteer fire department, locked up, very little input from the membership, a dreary attitude toward change, toward training, low interest, a lot of resistance to change. It was good this way for years. We're not going to change. And people don't come around. And often those tones go off, they go off, they go off, and often there's no response whatsoever. So, Bill, what is a successful volunteer fire department, and why are some of them failing? Maybe you agree or disagree with some of the stuff I said. And by the way, I want to reiterate the leadership BS. The football team can't win on Sunday if the coach isn't working with them year-round to get them motivated and focused on winning that game on Sunday. And so often, the leadership of volunteer fire departments have lost total touch with what the mission is. And again, the mission is to get the apparatus out quickly with trained and qualified personnel under good fire ground leaders. So what are your thoughts, Bill? What's successful? What's a failure?
Well, you make a couple of excellent points, Billy. I think that one of the most important things that we have to understand is that the whole concept of volunteer fire service is locally driven. And you can have great, successful departments in mid-sized communities or large communities, and you can have lousy ones in the same town right next door. It boils down to the community, and it boils down to the leadership of the organization. And I'll give you a couple of examples. In fact, I believe it was November the 10th, PostGazette.com, that's the Pittsburgh newspaper, there were three fire companies, volunteer fire companies, who were illustrated as how good they were in recruiting members and how successful they've been in sustaining quick response times and good staffing and being able to raise money, all those things we hear about as being bad, and here were three good examples. And I think that you'll go throughout the country and you'll find that happening in town A and then go to town B, and it's absolutely a major headache.
What's the common denominator?
Well, I think you're going back to community and leadership. If the community can support the organization, then it's going to survive. If the leadership drives the organization, then it's going to survive. If you're missing one or the other, you have problems. If you're missing them both, you're probably going to transform your organization into something else. And it just seems to be illustrative of things that I see as I go around the country. And when you talk about what makes things very good in organizations, you have to ask your people, if you don't talk to your people and ask them, what do you want as incentives or what do you want to make this department good, then as a leader, you've not done the service to your organization.
Well, Bill, and that question has to be genuine. You can't say, give me input, give me what your thoughts are, and then do what you want. If you're the president of a fire company, the chief of a fire company, and you're not interested in your members' input, don't ask them, because it's another false feeling of input, and then you're going to do what you want anyway. I mean, you see that too, don't you?
Absolutely, and you can't do it once and expect that to hold true for 5 years. I know in my company we do it about every 2 to 3 years, and it's changed. I can remember 10 years ago guys wanted cash per call. Now the guys and gals want something different. So you have to understand and you have to change, and if you don't want to change, then you're right. Things are going to be miserable.
Now, you said, Bill, that every couple of years you did. What do you hold, like a planning session and get input from different parts of your organization, or what do you do?
Well, as you know, Bill, our fire company was the first all-volunteer accredited department. And in that process, we had to do a strategic plan. Part of the strategic planning process is to gain input from your membership on what's going good, what's going bad, what do they see as the future. And in these strategic planning sessions, we gather input. But we were just told by our town officials that they would like to know what the members want so that they can help us plan for the future in designing a recruitment and retention program.
Let me comment on that. What Chief Genoway's talking about is the Commission on Fire Accreditation International, CFAI.org, provides you with a tool to determine basically the level of service your department's providing. It helps you set goals and objectives, and you set your own goals and objectives, and then you have to maintain those in order to receive your accreditation. Go ahead, Chief. I'm sorry, but I wanted to let the listeners know about CFAI, the Commission on Fire Accreditation International.
Well, thanks, Bill. That was a great commentary. Some people, I understand, still don't understand what accreditation is, and I encourage them to go to the website. But I was just talking about how that planning model or planning process is critical, and what we suggested in Pennsylvania as part of SR 60 was not to do an elaborate planning process, but do something and figure out the top two or three things you need to do over the coming years. And if you see recruitment and retention as one of them, then develop a plan, use outside resources if necessary, but do something to change what's happening today. And I have a firm belief, after doing the research for the USFA project and all of the fire departments that I get to see around the country, I'm convinced that fire chiefs and fire departments have been somewhat accepting the fact that membership is going to drop and you do more with less, and you find a way to do that. What I've seen happen is a transition of those people that you could have got have gone off to something else instead. It could be those people that don't want to be firefighters are now members of the Optimus, the Elks, and all those other groups, or they become part of the JCs, or they become part of the senior citizen support group, or they're with their kids at all the sports activities. And as a result, we've missed the opportunity for their small amount of volunteer hours. They've gone somewhere else. And I have a concern that we may have missed an opportunity and that we'll never be able to get back in the game.
Well, you got to have a core group, obviously, of people responding. And you know, one thing that's making me think that what you're talking about is fairness. If someone joins your volunteer fire department, doesn't want to go to calls, but will do fundraising, will do meetings, will do maintenance, things like that, that's fine. What about the members that don't want to do that, don't go to calls, but still come around and vote at the meetings? I mean, I know of one fire department in Delaware where there's 30 or 40 members running most of the calls, but the annual meeting, 200 or 300 people show up, and they control it. How do you fix that problem?
Well, that goes back to the bylaw issues, and you really have to look hard at what you want for performance of the organization. And many of those bylaws for organizations were established under one of three different models back in the Ben Franklin era. And you can actually trace your bylaws back to those three different sets in the 1700s. You've got to modernize them. And if you don't modernize them every 5 years, not only might you run into various types of organizational design issues and conflicts, but you also might run into scenarios that would prevent you from getting grants, that would prevent you from getting funding from multiple sources, and could even create some type of a harassment conflict in your organization.
There's a lot of kicking and screaming when you make those kind of changes.
They are, but if you don't do them, then you're putting your organization years behind the current demands for how to run a good corporation or organization.
Well, let's look at kicking and screaming. Speaking of, SR60, Pennsylvania. I remember when I first heard you involved with that, got a couple emails, it was great. People were riled up. What were they riled up about? What was so upsetting to people about SR60, but yet it's moving forward? And my impression is, for the most part, most of the Pennsylvania Fire Service is now bought into it. Maybe I'm not correct. What do you think?
Well, let's put it this way. If there are dissenters, and there are, they are relatively few from what we have found out. And we have been doing a series of seminars around the state. There are about six of us doing them. And we've been trying to educate all these groups on what the mission of SR60 is and what the content of it is. And it's 90% of the challenge is negative perception. For instance, I was up in central Pennsylvania 2 weeks ago, and someone came up to me and said, well, you're going to put us all out of business.
Right.
And I said, explain how we're going to do that. And they said, well, you're going to make us do all this training. And there is not one training issue in SR60.
That's kind of unusual. The rest of the country doesn't have a lot of rumors in the fire service. That must be unique to Pennsylvania.
And another one was, well, the towns are all going to take it over. Well, frankly, in Pennsylvania, the local level of municipal government is responsible for fire protection. The towns have had the responsibility for years. So it's, in fact, since day one. But many fire officers and firefighters don't understand that. They don't understand the statutes. So what we're trying to make them do is understand the issues that face them and then be able to work within them. But our issues boil down to a very simple few, Bill. First of all, with funding. It's clear that there are some towns in Pennsylvania that really have to go out and beg for money to make their operations function. They have very small budgets, but it's a function of the small towns.
Right.
Then you have some of the communities that are dying and they're going into bankruptcy. You have to find a way to support the infrastructure, and you have to change when that infrastructure change occurs. So we're trying to match those with the growing communities. There are lots of them in Pennsylvania. And you have to try to find a balance. But funding was number one. People was as equal a major issue, and it was recruitment and retention. So we've identified ways that you can fund systems for fire and EMS that do not burden the taxpayer. We've looked at benefit programs that can identify ways that firefighters and EMS personnel want to stay into the system because they'll be getting these extra benefits. We found several pieces of legislative change that had to be made to support the system being able to change in future years. And then we developed a very flexible service delivery model so that when organizations try to go in and make local elected officials understand why they need money or why they need a truck or whatever, it fits a business plan, it fits a budget, and everybody can understand the basic issues that surround the request.
And basically gives the local elected officials who represent the people the choice and type of service you want.
And that's it. And today in fire protection, everybody has to remember, it's the people that drive what that level is going to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Good. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with Bill Rainey and Crawford. We're talking about success or failure volunteer fire departments. We're going to come back and talk about the West End Fire and Rescue Company in particular. What draws people to West End and why it's successful? Why do you guys think it's successful? Bill, we'll be right back.
Welcome to the latest edition of Through the Smoke with Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, addressing issues impacting all firefighters' safety, health, and morale.
Success or failure, volunteer fire departments. We're focusing on the mission, why some volunteer fire departments succeed and why some fail. Let's talk for a few minutes with Chief Randy O'Donnell of West End Fire and Rescue in Shippensburg, Pennsylvania. Randy, why are you successful? What draws people to West End?
Well, one thing, we were very fortunate. I had a good base. You know, when our department was founded, young people was really instilled as the organizers and the leaders of this organization and the community. So I had a good base here to come into with the junior member programs and stuff that was in place. Most of these things were put in by Crawford, you know, years ago in the early 70s. So But as we started to see change in the community and change in the fire department, we had to make some hard choices. Central Pennsylvania is lucky that the manpower has not been a real great issue like it has been in other places in the state. So, I mean, the other departments within the Shippensburg community and Franklin, Cumberland County, for the most part, have been doing relatively well. I mean, there's some segments where they're having issues, but for the most part, have done really well. But we had to make some changes on the way we look at things and how we do things.
Well, let me jump on that a minute, Randy. It's 11 o'clock Tuesday morning, middle of the week. Your tones go off right now. How many members are at the firehouse?
When I drove past on the way from work this morning, there was about four or five cars there. And plus, I had one or two guys that live close to the station I knew that were available today.
So right now, will you put two engines on the road?
I would put the first new piece on the road right away. And
with
the
how
second
many people?
With probably four.
Okay.
And then the next new piece would probably come out with about three or four.
How many minutes later?
About a minute or so later.
So within 2 minutes, you're going to put two pieces of apparatus on the road with between six and eight people.
Yeah, if everything goes well. Yeah.
Is that consistent?
Yeah, pretty consistent.
What guarantees that?
Well, it's the pride that people have within the organization. I have a lot of career people that are career of another department, you know, maybe in D.C., Montgomery County, Frederick County, in the federal system, and they still volunteer in their days off. That's been a plus for not just West End, but the whole Shippensburg Fire Department as a whole. That's been a good success for us.
Those are what they call the two-hatters.
Yep.
Who are career firefighters and also volunteer. And that makes some people insane. But you know what? It's a fact of life. And those firefighters enjoy being firefighters all the time.
They love their job, and they bring their talent home. And
I know they take hits, but you know what? In many cases, if it weren't for those people volunteering, the trucks may not get out, and then someone would respond back and say, well, then they'd have a career department. Well, they might, but they may not. The tax base just doesn't exist in a lot of these communities. Anyway, back to West End specifically. So you'd get a crew out, seven or eight people. Why are they there? Why hang out there?
Well, the thing that we've done here in the past, Crawford is instilled. We try to make this that people want to be there. You know, we try to delegate things down to the lowest person on the totem pole. They have responsibilities, and this place is theirs, you know. They have things that they're responsible to do. I got guys that we try to make it you don't have to be an officer to have responsibilities. And, you know, you might be in charge of maintenance. You might be in charge of a committee.
Interesting. So yeah. Everyone in your organization, I mean, if I move to your area tomorrow and I join as, you know, I'm just Joe or Jane Citizen off the street, am I given an assignment besides my training and other stuff in my first year? Am I given?
Well, once we learn your talents, you know, once you display I have a talent, and if it's in vehicle maintenance or if it's administrative functions, I mean, you know, and you don't have to have a lot of skills today. With just the computer work and all that type of things that go on today, they might have talents to design programs for you to go out to the community with.
So everybody has a little bit of a buy-in.
Yeah, everybody has a stake in the organization. And we try to do that with our junior members, our senior members, or, you know, we try to just make sure that everybody has a stake within the organization. And then we try to make sure that even we had committees, and perfect example is our 50th anniversary committee that we just came off of. This committee came in and composed of wives, family members of the firefighters, took parts in like subcommittees, and you know. So when you're going to, well, I got to tell your wife that you're going to a meeting. You know, maybe your wife is going along, maybe one of your sons and daughters are going along for one reason or another, but. We're trying to make
well,
activities
I would encourage
there
my wife to join another company.
Yeah, I would.
That's a whole other side.
but we've done things like that where family members have come in, and mothers and fathers have done work at the firehouse, and that we've kind of just made it, you know, just it's a big pride issue. And when you have pride in your organization, people are going to come around.
So if you have involvement at all levels, it sounds like, your family members can become involved. Honestly, I would think that would be a deterrent in some organizations.
Well, in some it is, some it may be, but for us it's work that, you know, if the firehouse is not just a bad place, you know, as far as the spouse.
Oh, yeah, right,
concerned.
He's going down there again.
Yeah, he's just going there just to hang out. They see there's more activity in there, just going there watching TV or just, you know, sitting in the engine room shooting a bullet or two in the morning. You know, the guys, they're there for a purpose. You know, you have your meetings, you have your training, you do whatever, but there's other things that are going on. And we try to keep the more active that your organization is, and we try to stay really active within the community, keep your name out there constantly.
How do you do that?
Well, it's through media. You know, we've done stuff with our own organization. We've done stuff as a Shippensburg Fire Department.
All right. What are some of the things you do other than go to fire rescue calls?
Oh, we try to keep our name in the paper all the time for different things. You know, different programs that we have to offer for fire safety, for some of the things that we can do as far as like we have a sign program where we'll put reflective signs up. We put things. We do things like that.
Like house numbers.
Yeah, the house number thing.
Okay. Okay.
The fire department has a free smoke detector program that was based on a girl that passed away here in the community, and they have that. So we keep things like that. We just try to keep our name out there. Anything positive that we're doing, somebody in the department achieves something. You know, they achieve a certain level of training or something. We try to keep our name out there, and that press is good because. Things aren't always good that comes out in the press, but people absorb a little bit more. Say, hey, well, this organization's pretty good, but they just taking a hit for this one or two.
Well, that's sort of like what Crawford was saying. You physically open the doors, but you're literally opening the doors by sharing with the community the good stuff that's going on in your fire company. And I would guess if you screwed up, you'd probably share that, too, to keep those open lines of communications.
Yeah, and you try not
to
hide when you do screw up. You try not to hide it, and people are more forgiving when they see that, hey, you know, these guys are out here. It was an honest mistake or whatever, you know. So people are a little bit more, you know, reluctant to forgive if your name's out there positive 98% of the time.
Let me ask you a question. We talked before, and really my bottom line is, and it always has been, I don't care if you're career department, volunteer department, combination department, highly paid, poorly paid, whatever. When the tones go off, how many people are you putting on the road? What's the quality of those people? What's the training of those people? Now, I want to ask you a question. At West End, these 7 or 8 daytime personnel, what is their training level, and would they be as well trained if they were not also career firefighters somewhere else?
Yeah, most of the guys that we have right now have Firefighter 1, Firefighter 2 within the state of Pennsylvania, the Pro Board. We're looking at doing more, and this is one area, a little bit of a weakness that we found that we need to go to the next level to get people up to like the officer level. That's
how do you get
step.
Your members to want to train?
Well, we have training there every Thursday night. The county, both Franklin and Cumberland County, have wonderful training programs and opportunities. We're close to Harrisburg Air Community College. We're close. Well, Franklin County has its own training center now. It's just close. It's easy to motivate them.
Make it convenient for them.
You make it convenient, and I got a good training officer.
Do they have to? You have to. If you're going to ride the truck, you have to.
If you're going to ride, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, do I have a couple of drivers or I said some of my senior guys? They're not taking all of the stuff that I require some of my new guys to take, but they all have their pump one, pump two, you know, within the state. And,
well, you know, there's been some discussion about that also recently on some of the sites and some of the emails. Is firefighters riding the apparatus who are not attending training, and can that cannot happen at West End?
No. We have standards for them. We just go through it every year, you know, who can ride and who cannot ride. You got to meet a certain percentage of training, percentage of fire calls and fundraising, so on.
But it doesn't mean they're out of the fire company. It just means they can't ride the apparatus.
No, and you know it doesn't take much to get your training levels back up again. You know, we offer training through various forums. You know, we have guys there during the day. My assistant chief, he's my training officer. He's there. He works. He's a Hagerstown fireman. So if he's there during the day, he can get a group of people together to go out and do a couple drills, a couple evolutions.
So for those who work nights and are around during the day, if they don't make the Thursday night drill, there are alternative
we'll do something with them during the day or the weekends. Yeah.
To make up for that train. Now, junior members, I'm an advocate of junior programs. I have certainly questioned about at what age they should physically be participating based upon some of the things we see at emergencies. And sometimes, you know, it's sort of like, at what age does a firefighter stop going to calls? Well, it depends on the firefighter. Some people say that, you know, once you reach a certain age, you shouldn't go to calls anymore. My response is, let's do your physical, let's do an evaluation, and then we'll determine. And by the way, we also were just notified a firefighter died in Erie County, Pennsylvania this morning, apparently passed out and went into cardiac arrest at the scene of a building fire. So our thoughts and prayers out to the folks in Erie County. We'll have more on that later, perhaps. Tell me about your child's dream program and what is that? I've heard people talk about it. They said to me, ask him about the child's dream program. Tell us about it.
Well, this program we came up with around 1997. I was actually watching the CNN news, and they had a thing on L.A. County, you know, with Career Department, had the kids to their fire academy just as far as a public relations tool, a recruitment tool. I guess they're also having issues of getting good quality firefighters. So I guess they put this day event on. They had kids there doing different evolutions, different things. So, and we were looking for new ways because our junior member program started to become stagnant. You know, we wasn't getting a whole lot of new kids in. And, you know, you really, the ones that we did get, we really had to go work out. We had to really work to get them. So I seen this program. I brought it up to our company meeting. I said, why don't we look at getting a committee together? And I told them I seen here on CNN, if we could come up with like a weekend thing where we could get kids to come here to the firehouse, about 15 to 20 kids.
What's the age and how do you get them?
It's ages 11 to 13. We do an ad on the in the local newspapers of an application. And the kids just put an application in, and we take the first 20. And the last couple of years, we've had like 25, 26, 27 kids. So we went a little bit above what we really set out to do. But we have these kids that come into the station. We put a two-day program on. We have the parents come in.
Parents are with the kids?
The parents come in for an orientation like 2 weeks before the program. We give them a PowerPoint presentation of the program and what the kids can expect for the weekend, show them around the firehouse, sign all these documents and stuff that we had to run through with our lawyers, you know, for releases and everything like that. We work with VFIS, our insurance carrier, as far as our liabilities. I mean, because that was a lot of liability issues when we first got this thing started.
And what do you end up after the 2 days? What do you get? What is this kid? How is this kid different on Sunday than he was on Friday?
Right? Well, when he comes out of this thing on Sunday, he's hopefully has an appetite for the fire service. We're bringing kids in here. We do a thing. It's basically what's a round robin. They go to different stations like SCBA, first aid. You know, protective clothing. We send them to different places. Then in the afternoon, we do a program with rescue drills, engine company drills, things like this we're doing with them all afternoon.
Why would other volunteer fire departments want to use it?
Well, what it's done for us, it's taken our junior member program where we've had like three or four junior members. Like right now, I'm up to about 15. I'm at maximum number that we'll take in.
What's their age groups?
Ages 14 to 18 is the junior members.
Okay, and then 18 they can apply to be a regular member.
Yeah, then they'll be senior members then.
Okay, so you're basically planting seeds.
Yeah, we're planting seeds. Right now, the group I have, a lot of the guys I have living at the bunk room right now at the station, were in the first Child's Dream in 1998.
What do you mean living in the bunk room? You have firefighters that actually live in your firehouse?
Yep, we have. This was instilled back when Crawford was there. We had a bunk room that was put in there around 1976.
Generally.
And we moved up into up through the years. We got a nice bunk room facility, shower facility, two lounges for the guys. So, yeah, we got a nice place for the guys to stay.
You got guys and girls living there?
Yes, we do. Right now, I don't have no girls living there. Occasionally, I have girls that live here because I have an engine driver that's a female. So, occasionally, if I need a driver, I'll call her. She'll sleep in.
So, the male-female is not an issue in your department?
Actually, I do have a separate bunk room for them.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
But they're not afraid. If they had to, they can co-ed.
Yeah, so, whatever. As long as everybody acts like
humans. Yeah, for most
girl.
Part. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
There's
cool.
A story behind that.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that, Crawford. You know, you've seen West End go from what sounds like a standard volunteer fire company doing okay. Obviously, you saw some warning signs, and under your leadership and the leadership of your members, you made some changes. What did it over the years to bring West End to where it is today as what appears to be a successful fire company where people want to be there and people want to join?
My main objective at the time was, or my main thought process at the time, as being supposedly the leader of this group of individuals for this fire department was, and I always preached this thing because it was always talked to me, being there in that part of Pennsylvania was Crawford, look over the mountains. And that was just to get up and look outside of our own environment and
right.
See what was going
well,
on.
Okay.
And see what was going on.
I've joined the conference.
What other people were doing and what other programs were becoming in place that may fit in our department, and how could we make those work and get it up board, and just to keep the department fresh and to keep it hopefully a step ahead of some of the other departments, and hopefully some of that would rub off on those departments too. And that's what the changes were that we brought in, was to keep the new programs. Like I said, we it was very strong in the 70s. It was very strong with the bunk room program, with the live-in program. We were fortunate to be in a college town, so we went what a lot of departments are doing today. You see it in Pennsylvania firemen; they're all looking for live-ins.
Yeah, right. You know, that's funny. I love your look over the mountain comment, Pete Gansey. Who the late great Pete Gansey, who was New York City's fire chief, who was tragically murdered on 9/11/01, and I were talking one day, and he said something very similar. He said, "I need to get the members of FDNY and particularly my officers to cross the river once in a while and go see what's going on in the rest of the country." And that's that same logic you're talking about.
That's right. You know, I had a very nice comment paid to me in about 1960 or 1976 or so by the late John T. Hagan from New York
City. Oh,
sure,
yeah, another
and
one.
And he said, he looked at me and he said, "Crawford," he said, "you got one of the best-kept secrets going in the world down here." He said, "You're living in utopia with the people that are following you and what you get out of your department." He said, "That's excellent." But it was just, you know, I went into PG County. I went into Montgomery County. I looked at the departments. You know, in the 60s, I looked at the volunteer departments. We developed sistership companies with departments in PG County, Berwyn Heights, Eden Fire Department there in Lancaster County, Wormleysburg. I brought the crews down from one of the grounds up in Pennsylvania and got them in our department, got them socialized, got them talking about what they were doing that seemed to work, and we just put some of those things in place, and that was the bunk-in program, the live-in program. We started, like I said, I was chief when we got the county degree to start to doing all the street numbering and the house numbering. We had the box systems put up. We had the county. We were able to put through the county communication center that we put the multiple station or company response programs into effect. There's no more of this 6-minute delay or response coming up. It was like the county had the authority from every department. If you weren't on the street in 3 minutes, the next due company went. There was no repeated sound and tones, and nobody shows up. So,
well, all these changes that you're involved in, Crawford, and that's one of my favorite things is the multi-company responses. I think gone is the day, based upon call volume and other reasons, where just one company should respond to almost any run. Even on the highway, you need multiple companies just to protect our personnel.
That's correct.
As you were doing these things, clearly there were people who didn't like these ideas. How did you convince them, or where are the bodies buried, one or the other?
Well, you know, like you said, every chief has his detractors, and I'm not taking credit for myself, but I think I was a strong enough leader that we pushed through most of these things.
Well, that's fine, and there's nothing wrong with that.
We did this thing. We got, like Randy was telling you, we had good media coverage. You know, during my tenure as chief, I had a newspaper reporter ride with me on a lot of calls, a lot of times.
Just even in a small volunteer fire department, you had the media spend time with.
I had the media spend time with, and that's like what Randy said. Randy O'Donnell's in the newspaper more than most politicians are back there.
Well, but that's him marketing his fire company.
Getting the word out there.
And
we did the same thing, and it was kind of neat when I was recruited and came to Minneapolis in 77. It was kind of nice all of a sudden to walk away, you know, and kind of come out of the limelight. But, you know, it was just kind of the department or you was doing something or promoting some program was just almost constantly in the newspapers and the thing. And that's what it kept my department and it kept the other departments center stage in the community and in the customers' eyes that we serve. You know?
For a volunteer fire department that's not out in the open, that doesn't open the doors, doesn't welcome members, doesn't welcome change, that type of change is extremely difficult. And to get people, you know, this is kind of like a little social club here, and that's great. But in many cases, it ends up biting you in the tail when things aren't going so well, and we're certainly seeing that in some areas around the country now as volunteer fire departments are being looked at harder and harder and harder. Bill, let's chat with you for a second. You still with us, Bill?
I'm here.
Okay. Talk about some failures. You've seen some failed volunteer fire departments. You've seen some collapse. You've seen some issues. The failure is if your fire company does not get out for a call, you have failed, period. Doesn't have to be a dozen calls over a period of time. The first time your fire company fails to get out on a run, you have failed. It's a major warning sign, and action has to be taken. But interestingly enough, even before you fail, you can predict it. You can predict the failure. What would you say, Bill, are some of the failures, and what are some of the warning signs that a fire company is in the failure mode, and they either need to change internally or just make changes to, if you know, sometimes they can try all these different things, and maybe you just have to hire some personnel. And that isn't the end of the earth. The bottom line is people need our help, no matter how we get it to them. So what about failures, Bill, and what are some of the warning signs?
Well, it's funny you should mention that. I was this past weekend down at the iChiefs VCOS, Volunteer Combination Officers Section's annual conference at the Symposium in the Sun.
Right.
They released the Red Ribbon Report, and in the Red Ribbon Report, there are 13 specific items that tell you when fire departments are in trouble and when you have to start doing things differently, and you've mentioned some of them already today. You can't get the staffing. You can't get the truck out. You can't get the money. I mean, it's almost like you were reading from their 13 items because we're talking about those major issues, staffing, funding, support system, apparatus maintenance. All those kinds of things make up the kind of indicators that tell you you're potentially having trouble. Now, how do you manage that? It's real simple. You develop plans. And you monitor those. And it goes back to this issue that today, fire departments are businesses and they have to be run like businesses. And they aren't those old social clubs and networks that used to be the thing to do or the thing to join. So we really have to bring even additional business professionalism to our service capability. And if we don't, we're going to have problems. The other thing that I see that is extremely challenging, leadership, whether it's a fire chief, a commissioner, a board of trustees, president, or any other officer, you have to look to win-win propositions and resolutions and negotiations. The days of taking a hard line and saying it's going to be this way or not are probably gone. And you have to understand the perspectives that everyone has, and you have to bring all of their issues to bear, and you have to find out how you solve these multiple problems before you come up with a solution. So I think those are the two biggest things, planning and identifying win-win solutions for challenges that you face will go a long way toward developing a volunteer fire service that will be more effective in the future.
Well, you commented about this document, and no kidding, I'm sitting here online, Chief John Buckman, former president of the IFC and a good friend to most of us, just sent this to me, and I hadn't opened it up yet. Is this Lighting the Path of Evolution, the Red Ribbon Report?
That's it, and it's available on their website.
Okay, and let me just review some of these items you were just talking about, considerations, and see if these are the ones we're talking about. Responsibilities of the fire department outpace their capabilities. The volunteer fire department has the inability to raise funds. Waning political support. The politicians don't support you anymore. Internal conflict, the infighting. Why would anyone want to be in your department of all kinds of infighting going on? Your officers filling in lower operational positions, staffing shortages that result in the chief driving apparatus, things like that. Does that sound like the stuff we're talking about here, and is that what you're talking about as far as the concerns that fire departments need to look at for those warning signs?
That's absolutely it.
Yeah, here's some more. Yeah, too many jobs, too little time. Kingdoms come first. Lack of budget support, missed deadlines, catastrophic losses, volunteers priced out of the community. This is a great report, and it is available on the VCOS website?
It is.
Excellent.
It was put up yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Okay, we'll post that. For those of you listening to the show, if you look at our link, the link will be right next to it for you to go take a look at this report. So, Bill, what can they do? How do they change?
Well, the first thing in any change management process is that you have to understand that change is imminent, whether you're that 8-person volunteer fire station in the middle of nowhere or you're that 200-person volunteer fire department in a suburban area. The outside influences being forced upon you by people, by funding, by the demands that are going to be placed upon you, they're going to change your system, and you have to be able to manage those changes. If you don't take on that change management process and start to look ahead and plan for it, then you will run into those types of conflicts that we've talked about today.
So it's kind of how bad do you want to remain? How badly do you want to maintain or create a successful volunteer fire department? It really comes from the members.
It comes from the membership. And some of the things you've mentioned today demonstrate that unbelievably well. This issue about pride in an organization is right on the money. It's amazing how many places I go and see members who have left Department A and joined Department B 10 miles away because that's the department they want to be in.
Right.
So you see samples, I'm sure as we talk about them, everyone that's listening will have seen this either in their own department or in another department, and they just have to understand you need to manage it as the leader. If you don't manage it as the leader, you either won't be the leader long or someone else is going to manage that change for you.
Or the tail's going to start wagging the dog and the problem will be solved. We're going to be back with the final comments. We're speaking with Dr. Bill Genoway, Chief Randy O'Donnell, and former Chief Crawford Wiesling about really the success or failures of volunteer fire departments. We'll be right back for the final word.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
We're back on Through the Smoke with Radio at firehouse.com. Success or failure, volunteer fire departments. Before we finalize our program for today, it's with deep regret that we advise you that in Union City, Erie County, Pennsylvania, James Lafferty, 69 years old, who was the chief of that fire department's fire police traffic control unit, died after collapsing and going into cardiac arrest at the scene of a building fire last night, which was on the 14th of November. Today is the 15th when we're recording this show. So our sympathies go out to those in Erie County affected by Chief Lafferty's passing. While we're finishing up discussions on success or failures of volunteer fire departments, as you note on firehouse.com on the link for today's show, there are several other links on there for you. There's the Pennsylvania Fire Service Institute site where you'll be able to take a look at SR60, which is basically fire service legislative changes. Now, why would you in Oklahoma want to look at it? Because you can look at these and see if any of these would apply for your area and perhaps introduce legislation in your state or commonwealth or wherever you live to see if these would assist you in making positive changes for your volunteer fire department. Bottom line, Bill Genoway, we've talked about a lot of stuff in a short period of time. What should fire departments do? They're listening. Some are interested in this. Some are frustrated during the show. Some are saying, see, that's us. It sounds like us. What should they do?
Well, first of all, they have to recognize that the volunteer fire service is still viable. But it will be viable in a different fashion than it was 20 years ago and 30 years ago. And what we had then is pretty much gone. What you have to do is determine what's going to be applicable to your community tomorrow, what's going to be applicable to your people tomorrow, and how are you going to make the fire service and the demands being placed upon it work together. And if you can develop a plan to do that and do it in a local fashion, there's a high probability you're going to be successful. We hear about successes over and over and over again, and we hear about failures over and over and over again. The issues between them and why some are good and some are bad boils down to local leadership taking the reins or taking the bull by the horn or whatever else we want to call it, but they are taking charge and they are driving change for the betterment of their organization and the community. It's not a separate street. And last but not least, find a way to work with local elected leaders. If you don't find a way to work with local elected leaders, you will have conflict. And the conflict will only breed more conflict, and that doesn't do any good for anybody.
appreciate that, Chief. Randy, West End Fire and Rescue appears to be a pretty successful company. How many times last year did you not get a truck out?
Oh, we may have only had two or three times. Most of that was like for transfer assignments and things like that.
But first due responses to
first
your community, you've never
line.
Failed to get
no,
out.
No.
Outstanding. Bottom line, Randy, what's your advice to those listening?
The biggest thing the chiefs have to recognize, we have to change with the times. We have to change with the change of the makeup of our community. Our community in this area has changed dramatically from a rural to, you know, starting to go into suburban areas, but with some rural pockets. So we have to change with that. Our membership, we have the people aren't the same people that were joining, you know, 10 years ago, and you have to find ways to keep them there, keep them involved, and recruit new people, and be willing to change the rules, you know, change the regulations that these people, that everybody will fit in and be a part of our, you know, the organizations. If we don't, we're going to fail, and if we don't recognize the changes that are coming, the municipalities or other agencies are going to change it for us, so we got to just be proactive. You know, what I do in Shippensburg may not all work at somewhere else, and I got to look at everybody else's ideas too. So I always have to be out there looking to see what everybody's doing, how I can keep my organization viable, and every other chief needs the same.
Got to look over the mountain.
You got to look over the mountain.
And be worried if you hear that music from Deliverance start playing. Get off the mountain quick.
Just get off the mountain quick.
Absolutely. Crawford Wiesling, very, very popular and well-known fire investigator throughout the country and a former fire chief and continuing as a proud member of West End Fire and Rescue. Crawford, you've seen him come, you've seen him go, you've seen a few generations. I was laughing to myself earlier when you were talking about the 70s, and odds are the majority of our members weren't born yet. So the majority of our listeners to this show, you've brought an interesting perspective, and you've seen decades of change in the fire service, and you're proudly a former chief of a very successful fire company. What's your advice to others, Crawford, especially if I might put you in the corner, what's your advice to the senior members of many of these fire companies who've been around for a while?
The two drive goals is the failure to step up and take the leadership roles and be a split leader by leadership by consensus, and then when the consensus doesn't always work, then change the leadership by example, and lead these people, get involved, and lead the fire companies in looking at change. And that was my end comment, is that my goal and objective to now, even as an older one now, is to feed Randy O'Donnell and that department and make them successful. And that's when I say look over the mountain, that's still what I do, because Randy will vouch that I'm on him constantly, and we're shipping new programs or ideas that we see, or we talk to fire chiefs around the country that have a little niche or a little program going that we think may be successful, feed that back, and that's helped to promote and further advance the West End Fire and Rescue Company.
In so many fire companies, the senior members play such a vital role in guiding and supporting and feeding those who've now taken over the reins. But unfortunately, in many volunteer fire companies, the senior members who've been around, quote, forever, are a deterrent. They slow things down. They can even create an organization culture where no one wants to be there. Certainly younger members can do that too. But it's the senior members who've been around for a while that can really set the tone for the future. We've talked about volunteer fire departments and some being very successful, and service being the number one focus to those who call 911. And other fire departments we've talked about simply don't keep up with that goal. And as I said earlier, the bottom line is staffing, timely response, training, and leadership, and the ability to change based upon the needs of your community, as well as the needs of the members of your organization, because it's a different generation today, are all part of our serious challenges. People say, but we've saved money with our volunteer fire department. That may be great, but if your volunteer fire department has poor response times, poor turnout, little or inadequate training, poor leadership, and an organization that's not willing to change, you might as well pack it in, because the money savings are nothing. Your community may feel like they're protected, but are they? You, as the firefighters listening to this show, know the answer to that in your own fire company. Check out the links we've got here for you on this site. You can check out the West End Fire Company and contact them if you have any questions or have any comments. IAFC's VCOS section, We have a link to that report that just came out about those warning signs and what you can do to maintain your organization or to transition to a combination fire department. It's not the end of the earth. It may be what's needed in your fire department. The NVFC's website, nvfc.org, can provide you with the cost calculator. And finally, check out pfesi.org, Pennsylvania Fire and Emergency Service Institute. Their link is right here as well, to learn about the legislative changes in SR 60 going on in Pennsylvania. You're listening to Firehouse.com. This is radio at Firehouse.com. And we're listening to Through the Smoke, Internet radio program. This is Billy Goldfeder. Be safe. Take care.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio at Firehouse.com. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned to Firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.